The Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, the previews are back for the Goal Line Club. This one will be at LC's in Northeast Minneapolis. So in between or maybe after the preview, you can stick around and play and do some bowling.
Yeah, and that's where, again, Northeast Minneapolis, and you're going to have some wonderful guests there. Mike Grimm, the play-by-play voice of your Golden Gophers on the radio, he'll be there. Justin Kinzemius, the Fargo Flash, everybody's favorite linebacker. Thomas Barber, the local kid here, helped Minnesota that 11-win season back in 2019. He'll be talking there. Plus, he'll have a Golden Gopher football coach giving an X's and O's talk. So if you want to register for the LC's, the Friday luncheon there, it's going to go from 11:30 to 1. If you're trying to make some lunch plans, go to goallineclub.org, click on events, and make sure you get signed up.
Ryan, I just want to let you know that Thanksgiving's coming, and I'm really thankful for you, and I'm thankful for the content you put on Gopher Illustrated.
That's about the nicest thing I think you've ever said to me, which I'm not entirely sure how I feel about that, but I'll take any compliment I can get. And this is where I wanted to make sure you guys knew. I know we have thousands upon thousands of listeners, and not all of you are on Gopher Illustrated, but I'm being upfront. I'm being honest with you. I don't even know if this is legal for me to do, but we are going to have a Black Friday to Cyber Monday sale. It is 75% off an annual membership. This is just for new members only. 75% off. That's like $20 for the entire year to support me, support Ryan James, get the best Gopher content that there is out there on the interwebs. In-depth previews, everything you want to know with recruiting, especially with signing day, somehow now 3 weeks away. But on Black Friday through Cyber Monday, check out the Twitter machine, go to Gopher Illustrated. You will see it's 75% off. If you've been waiting for a deal, this is literally, figuratively, spiritually, and socially the best deal you will find all year. 75% off for you new members. Make sure to check it out.
Welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns, and we welcome you guys back to what was that game on Saturday as an incredibly monotonous and poor first 15 minutes turns into an absolute rout as your Golden Gophers win 35-14 over the Indiana Hoosiers. The Gophers score 35 unanswered in the second, third, and fourth quarters before a late garbage time touchdown. And joining us, as always, to break down each and every one of these Gopher football games is my second cousin and former Golden Gopher offensive lineman, Derek Burns. Derek, it wasn't a great start, but they accelerated in the middle and they finished strong.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, guys. I'm looking forward to talking about this one. I don't know, in all the time we've been doing this, if we've seen one game where the offense has broke as many tendencies as they did in this particular game, and we can kind of go through it. But that was encouraging to see. And as you mentioned, Ryan, it was encouraging to see them bounce back after starting slow and finishing off and ultimately blowing them out.
Man, what a tease there. Derek Burns with the big tease for the episode. That's beautiful, Derek. Let's get into this. I just for those of you that are keeping track at home, my mom called within about 12 hours, noticed that I had a cold. So depending on if you bet that or not, that basically settles the score. So thanks for playing in the game at home. And I still have a cold, and I'm sorry you're going to have to endure it yet another week. So let's start when the Gophers were on offense, guys. On the day, Tanner Morgan, 14 to 20, 196 yards, 9.8 yards per pass, two touchdowns, QBR of 96. Generally speaking, fellas, I think we need to get into this maybe before we even get into the offense. He's the all-time winningest quarterback at the University of Minnesota. Ryan, I know you've said this numerous times. He's probably, for your money, the best quarterback that you've seen in your lifetime at the University of Minnesota. So kudos to him on the honor.
It says a lot about how mediocre this program has been, but also, you know, he's won a lot of games, and that's where it comes down to, do you think quarterback wins or a stat? Do you not? I'll let you decide for yourself, but To your point, I mean, he's now the all-time winningest quarterback. I believe he's got 25 wins in his Gopher career, and that's also where a long time since Minnesota's had a quarterback leave early. So, and it's been a very, you know, I wonder who he passed. I'm trying to think who it might have been. It couldn't have been – Weber's got to be somewhere on there. I'm just thinking of guys that I can remember that played for all 4 years.
I don't know. I'll try to look it up through the episode. But yeah, for him, Okay. Kudos to him. I mean, that's pretty impressive. I don't know, Derek. You know, longevity says a lot about being able to stay healthy, etc. And Yep. You know, in the grand scheme of things, he's found a way to win games. We've been critical, and he deserves the criticism. I don't think he'd shy away from it. But you know, he's found a way to win a bunch of games while being the quarterback at the U of M.
Yeah, he, first thing he said is where I was going to go, which is that you can't forget about durability. You know, that how many seasons, guys, before Tanner Morgan took over, how many consecutive seasons was it that we had multiple starters at quarterback specifically because of injury? So I don't want that to sound like a backhanded compliment. He's accomplished when he's played. He's accomplished a lot as well. But it starts with being consistent and being healthy and durable. You know, and at the quarterback position, he's not out there running option all the time, but he is taking hits. He is running the ball and keeping it once in a while and, you know, going through all the practices in the full season. So it starts there. And then, you know, beyond that, as you mentioned, being able to do more often than not what's asked of him, I think has been the key to his success. He hasn't always been asked to throw 45 times a game, put the entire offense on his shoulders, but he is asked to game manage from time to time. There have been games in the past where he has been asked to put more on his shoulders, and more often than not, he's responded. So congratulations to him.
Yeah, definitely worth the honor, and I wanted to make sure we mentioned it because that's no small feat. Kudos to him. And kudos to him for bouncing back. This was a good game from him. I know, Derek, you kind of teased it already, but they were able to break tendency a number of times. We saw some innovation, I'd say, in the passing game. A couple of nice things in incorporating span forward, a couple contested catches from Chris Ottman Bell, etc. But what did you see in terms of how the Gophers broke tendency in this game?
Well, I think we ended, you know, last week in the woes that they've had in the passing game, saying that they needed to do something, whether that was a change of personnel, whether that was a change of scheme, approach, whatever. But they needed to do something different in the passing game. And to their credit, they did that, specifically against Indiana. I believe, you know, in my opinion, Indiana's philosophy and their strategy on defense for this game was two main things. Number one is they really sat on the RPO routes. They really wanted to take that away. So they wanted to force Minnesota out of their tendency to throw that RPO, the slants, the digs, those things over the middle. And then secondly, they tried to be very creative and very unpredictable with their defensive sets. So the check with me, you know, that Minnesota likes to do on offense and get a read on where the defense is lined up. They tried to show things, line up, you know, bring a blitz without showing the look, other times showing a blitz look and backing out of it. So they tried to be confusing and really challenge Tanner Morgan and the coaching staff mentally. And again, to the Gophers' credit, the tendency breaks we saw were, I mean, several, I mean, off the top of my head, we saw hitch routes, out routes, you know, again, with the defense sitting on those RPO and things in the middle, what that opens up is those passes in the flats, the swing routes to the running back, you know, the wheel route type situations. We also saw routes designed for the tight end. Again, if you're going to sit on that RPO, on those slants and digs to the wide receivers, it's going to open up things to the tight end. We saw a couple tight end screens. How long has it been since we've seen a screen? So those four or five things, we keep going. But I think the most encouraging thing to come out of this game was to see them break tendency, actually take what the defense was giving them, not be stubborn, not come away with a 17-7 victory, which they easily could have done if they'd have just played it close and just ran the ball and drained the clock. They didn't do that. They took what the defense gave them. They got a little bit dynamic and again, ended up blowing them out.
Derek, I want you to be honest. How excited were you when you saw Minnesota throw a cushion coverage?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, that was it was a mixture of emotions, to be honest. And I don't want to be too negative here. But the positive was, yes, seeing that, okay, in the second half, Indiana mixed in more cushion coverage, you know, try to take away anything, you know, deep on the outside. So Minnesota came back and they threw the hitch route. They threw the stop route and got 6, 7, 8 yards underneath that cushion coverage, which is your conventional approach to that. So it was great to see. Now, the other side of it, which again, don't want to be too negative, is you wonder why they didn't go to that before. Why didn't we see more of that in previous games? But that's over and done with. You hope that, my hope is, guys, is that going forward, we continue to see this same approach, or at least more of it, you know, even beyond this season, but certainly through the rest of this year.
I mean, Tanner, overall, that first quarter wasn't great. Now, it would help if Daniel Jackson or Michael Brown Stevens could catch a contested catch. I mean, we talked about that significantly last week, that it's Chris Ottman-Bell who can win a contested catch. We've seen Dalen Wright do it. But they continue to throw these contested catch type of balls to Daniel Jackson and Michael Brown Stevens. And I can already hear the Tanner Morgan haters saying, was it, you know, so he's always throwing it so late. What does it matter? Well, yeah, the ball's late, but they still should be able to make that catch at least 25% of the time. And I think between the two of them right now, it's at about 10%, maybe. I really legitimately cannot remember the last time Daniel Jackson or Michael Brown Stevens won a contested catch. So, as the game continued to settle on, though, that's what left me kind of encouraged here, because I've just accepted at this point, Tanner Morgan's your starting quarterback for the next 2 weeks, being the Wisconsin game and the bowl game, no matter what. I think Fleck has essentially proven that. But it's that second quarter where Tanner wasn't afraid to make some of the throws, where a few throws stand out to me in particular. You look at that right before the end of the first half, we can just get to that whole sequence, but just trusting Chris Ottman-Bell there in a 50-50 ball situation to go up and get it, and he does, and he's rewarded. But I think maybe the best throw of the day from Tanner, or the best sequence in my mind, is Tanner Morgan standing in there and getting absolutely plastered by Micah McFadden. He knows he's going to get plastered. But I think in previous weeks, he just tucks the ball, doesn't throw it, and takes the sack. Morgan sees it coming, steps into it, gives his receiver a chance, and Chris Ottman-Bell comes down with it. And that's exactly kind of what I wanted to see, was that's what Fleck and Sanford had been talking about. They had some shots down the field that they just weren't throwing. Well, Tanner was throwing them, and he got rewarded. And that's that leaves me very much encouraged in terms of, if we see a Tanner Morgan that's willing to take some risks on against Wisconsin here, Luke, I think that should – I mean, it can't be any worse. So I think that's where I think it'll bode well for Minnesota.
Yeah, so on the day, the Gophers, we talked a little bit about the passing game. They found a way to get multiple guys involved. Brevin Spann-Ford, 3 catches, 67 yards. Chris Ottman-Bell, 4 catches, 44 yards. Dalen Wright, Daniel Jackson, Kai Thomas, Michael Brown Stevens all also recorded catches. A number of explosive plays, too. Obviously, the one to Spann-Ford. Ottman-Bell didn't really have necessarily an explosive play, but obviously had the big contested catches. Dalen Wright had the 34-yard reception. Daniel Jackson made a nifty move, found his way to 19 yards. Generally speaking, just in the passing game, you know, they didn't have gaudy numbers in terms of yardage, but on 14 receptions, what they were able to do is get some of those explosive plays in especially meaningful times, and that was big, and that helped transition into a running game that was pretty good, not amazing, but consistent, Derek. On the day, Kai Thomas, 28 carries for 105 yards. He was the workhorse, no question. They also sprinkled in Bucky Irving for 14 carries for 70 yards. What did you see from that Gophers offensive line yesterday?
Well, actually, I have to give some credit. You know, Indiana's front four, you know, to a lesser extent, front seven, they were ready for Minnesota to run the ball, which, of course, you would, having scouted Minnesota, be ready for them to run the ball 9 out of every 10 downs. So despite the fact that they had Minnesota ended up having a considerable amount of success, I don't think Minnesota just mauled Indiana's front seven on defense. Again, I think they were ready for it. Their coaches had them ready. They were game planning for that. But I think where their success came was what we just talked about, which is being more dynamic, which as the game wore on, things started to open up more and more. So, you know, the wrinkles continue in the run game. We've lamented, you know, the lack of variations in the passing game and some of the route combinations, which again got better this game, but that hasn't been the case in the running game. They continue to add layers. And in this particular game, they added another short yardage running play. So the fourth down conversion with about 9 minutes left in the second quarter And then also the touchdown, I believe, later on that same drive, we're out of the I formation with a brand new running play. So you continue to see the Gophers add where and react to what the defense is doing. So that I formation, sort of a version of an ISO running play, is really a man blocking scheme. So it's not a gap scheme. It's not a zone scheme. You line up an I formation and you take the fullback and the tight end and you fold them outside and the play is bent back and it gives you a little bit of an outside running play. It's not outside zone, but it bends that way. And it's a great counter to defenses loading up against inside zone, which has been Minnesota's tendency in short yardage. You know, whether it's out of Cole Kramer formation or not, what they've basically shown is they either put in a little bit of play action. Other than that, it's inside zone. So defenses know that they're loading up against it. The Gopher coaching staff comes back. They add in a new running play in short yardage. It gets them a fourth down conversion and a touchdown in this game. So, you know, again, in summary, I would just say that they continue to add layers to the running game and they're getting good production out of both starting running backs. You know, those guys continue to get better and it's going to be interesting to see. There are more layers they can add if we talk a little bit about the Wisconsin game coming up, there are some things they can add on even more that I think can help them.
Well, that's even where, if you want to continue to go down the wrinkle path, I mean, we just even saw the incorporation of some screens again. We saw that tunnel screen, I believe, in the first quarter to Daniel Jackson that got a first down. We see Minnesota on their second drive of the game run the ball seven straight times, I believe, after Daniel Jackson gets some yards after the catch, third and six at the Indiana 14. And they go back to that tight end middle screen that we really hadn't seen since, I think, Bowling Green, maybe. It was definitely September. And again, it's just these little creative little variations of you're applauding them for actually being creative, but then you're also in the back of your mind thinking, where was this against Illinois? Where was this against Iowa? Where was this against Bowling Green? And that's where it's good, but it's frustrating at the same time. But I mean, Luke, if you're going to give me an opportunity to talk about our Lord and Savior, Brevin Spanford, I'm definitely not going to miss the opportunity where Minnesota has a great play design where Chris Ottman-Bell kind of just runs right up the seam. So he starts on the right side and he just runs kind of an angle route right at the safety, takes the play side safety away. I think there's a coverage bust somewhere in there. I'll let the guru, that is Derek Burns, kind of explain where the coverage bust there was. And Tanner was a little late getting the ball out, but watching Tanner Morgan hit Brevin Spanford and Brevin turn and see there's no one within 50 yards of him and then hurdle a man. And it's in the explosive plays in the passing game that set it up, you know, that complemented the running game. It's what Sanford's been trying to talk about for 6 weeks, but this passing game really hadn't been able to get going. And that's where you look at all these second half drives. That's the second quarter drives, I should say, the second quarter is where Minnesota won this game. You look at it, Minnesota scores 21 points, Indiana scores zero. Minnesota has 163 yards of total offense. Indiana has a paltry four total yards on nine plays. But it's the passing game and these just little wrinkles of, we saw the screens again to try and get Tanner Morgan in more into rhythm. And that's where you look at, okay, Minnesota scored 21 points in the second quarter. Well, how'd Tanner do? 7 of 9 for 117 yards and a touchdown. But it was the little variations in the passing game that also helped them, Luke.
And Ryan, if I could, I just wanted to add, too, just to talk for a second about Daniel Jackson's explosive game. That also was a wrinkle that was shown, and the coaches identified what was there. Indiana essentially was playing, for the most part, playing man-to-man coverage on the split receivers and the outside receivers, and they were playing zone in the middle of the field. So Minnesota coaches recognized that. They ran trips to that side of the field, knowing that the inside slot receiver, in this case Daniel Jackson, was going to be isolated on a linebacker playing zone coverage. So all they did was simply ran off those man defenders on the outside with long routes. They ran Daniel Jackson on the simplest route in football, a small little 4-6 yard out route against that linebacker. He's able to catch the ball, and it's his athleticism and execution that gets him the explosive gain. But that was there because the coaches identified, we're going to get him isolated on a linebacker. We think he can win that route. And then when he catches it, there are no other defenders there. So if he's able to beat the linebacker, he's got an explosive gain because they've run off those man receivers. So getting back, just hammer this point home one more time. that's not the identity of the Minnesota offense, is to run things like out routes and hitch routes. They want to run RPO. They want to run the digs, the deep crosses, but they were taking what was given to them, and that was the most satisfying thing. That was what was there.
Yeah, and Derek, just as you and I texted numerous times yesterday, like, this is the kind of thing that has helped Tanner Morgan be successful, right? Getting confidence throws, because early in the game he wasn't great, and then he started to get into a rhythm and was much better.
Yep.
Again, only 14 of 20 is pretty good. I'm not going to try.
Only completing 70% of his passes yeah, with like three contested catch drops.
Yeah, it was a bad segue there in words for me. So I apologize. 14 for 20. Very good, very efficient. Two touchdowns, no interceptions, a good day for him. This is what you hope to see translate into the next game, is like, take what the defense gives you. Now, the defense next week is going to be significantly better, and we'll get into this more probably here in the episode. But generally speaking, I'm very encouraged that they took what the defense gave them. And, you know, basically we have to talk defense, and I don't know, we'll segue here shortly. Do you guys have anything left? Because I think we have to talk about how bad the Indiana offense was that allowed Minnesota to be on the field so much. But go ahead, Ryan.
Well, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the end of the first half. For whatever reason, and Justin Gard brought it up to me this morning on Go Football Sunday, was it just feels like Minnesota's had so many of these situations this year where they get the ball back right before the end of half, and they actually have success moving it into like the opponent's 30-yard line. And then it's just the kerfuffles of everything that has kind of encapsulated this Gopher football offense this season. So that's where the ill-advised throw from Donovan McCulley, Story Marion tips it to Tyler Newbin. Minnesota gets the ball back at the Indiana 31, 46 seconds left, two timeouts. And it's funny to hear Fleck after the game. Again, if you don't think that Fleck and his staff kind of know everything that's going on in terms of on the internets and in the media and different things like that, I think you'd be remiss. That's where he's like, well, Chip, if I didn't try to play for it, you're talking about Chip Scoggins of the Star Tribune. And he's like, well, he would have called me conservative. So I thought to myself, what would Chip do? I'll listen to Chip. Obviously he was joking, and he said he was joking, but what does Minnesota do with great field position up 14-7 and two timeouts left? Oh my God, Derek, they threw a deep comeback to the sticks right along the sideline. Shocker, works. Then they throw a design swing pass to Kai Thomas. And then Minnesota gets a cover one look where the safety is just playing in the middle of the field. And Morgan throws it right up to Chris Ottman-Bell, who's absolutely interfered with, but doesn't get the call. It's originally ruled incomplete, but Ottman-Bell gets a foot down, touchdown. They actually took shots at the end zone, fellas. They actually did it, and they were rewarded with it. What a time to be alive.
Well, they were rewarded with it. In my opinion, a poor decision by Tom Allen to throw the ball with under a minute to go. Probably should have gone into halftime.
Quarterback, and you had like seven total passing yards at the time.
Yeah, but here's, I'll even go, I'll go a step further, Ryan. They take shots, they throw the ball at the end zone, and they're rewarded. But even if they weren't, who cares? If they throw the ball at the end zone and it's picked off with 15 seconds left, 20 seconds to go, what's the downside there? I really don't think Indiana is going to take the touchback or take the ball and go 90 yards in 20 seconds. So it's those situations. I know we've been hammering on this in previous weeks, but they're almost free plays at that point. So you have, I don't want to say nothing to lose, but you have very little to lose. The cards are in your favor at that point. It was good to see them take advantage, and they were rewarded. But again, the point still stands. Even if they hadn't been, so what? They still go into halftime, with a lead, and you play on.
So I don't know if you guys saw this. I just want to get this in on the Ottman-Bell touchdown. Ron Johnson was covering for JG on the sidelines, and he had an incredible tweet during the game. And this is the kind of sideline reporting. I think you played with Ron Johnson, right, Derek?
Yes, yeah, I did.
Okay, so he tweets, spoke with the side referee at halftime that was in the corner of the Gophers wide receiver, Chris Ottman-Bell's TD, asked him what happened. He said, I was watching them fight for the ball, then looked down and saw his back on the white. Then I saw the replay and said, bleep, it was a TD. So the humanity of the referee, like, I thought that was amazing.
I didn't see that one during the game. Wow.
Yeah, that was good.
Well, at least you can admit a mistake, because it was pretty clear, as you note on the replay. Now, I also know some people want to be mad about Fleck punting from, what was it, Indiana's like 34 and then 40-yard line. I get it, but I'm choosing not to be upset because Minnesota was never going to lose that game. Like, Indiana's offense was so awful, and Minnesota's defense was so good, and you were up two scores. Actually, you're up, So, like, when in the end, what was it? Early fourth quarter, Minnesota punts from the Indiana 34 on, like, a 4th-and-3. You know, I wasn't incredibly keen on it on the Twitter machine, but I get it. You're up three scores. It's early fourth quarter. Like, I just know that I've seen it on the Twitter. I've seen it on Gopher Illustrated where it's like, do I regularly want to ever be punting from the opponent's 34-yard line? No. Like, if this would have been Minnesota's in a tie game or Minnesota's, you know, trailing or whatever it may be, if it's a one-possession game one way or another, yes, it's a conversation worth having and whatnot. But I'm also sitting here like, I'm not going to chastise a man for being up 28-7 and we're mad at him for punting where he punted from because he doesn't trust his kicker to hit from 49, which I don't blame him. Because Trickett hasn't been very good from 50-ish. And we saw the Dragan Kesich experiment. So I wanted to get your guys' reaction to it. I am not – it doesn't appall me like it appalls some people. I just feel like if that's what's stuck in your craw at this point, you're just finding reasons to be angry, if that makes sense. So if you want to be angry, that's your prerogative. But what do you two think about the decision to punt from the Indiana 34 and then the Indiana 40?
I honestly didn't hate it. I thought from a game script perspective, it was clear like they were willing to force the Indiana defense basically to have to make plays, which they were unable to do. I just don't think it's that crazy because you saw the turnovers that they were able to force. Make Indiana prove it and make them go a long field and they're able to pin them deep. Like, make them prove it. I didn't have any problem with that.
No, I didn't either. If you're in a shootout, it's probably a different situation. Yes, but right. Indiana's not able to move the ball. You pin them deep, and you know I'm totally fine with that. Again, I think you base that on how your defense is playing and how their opposing team's offense is playing. And I think the feedback to that point was go ahead and punt the ball.
The only thing else I want to touch on offensively, Luke, is the running backs. Another game where 40 carries for 175 yards and three scores. We saw Marquise Irving's touchdown at the very end there. I mean, it was a great touchdown run. I mean, look, it's a true freshman who gets immediate pressure in his face. He doesn't panic. He stays patient and then absolutely jukes a veteran corner for Indiana and then accelerates past another guy to walk into the end zone. I mean, Marquise Irving is going to be a special back here. And then it's the fourth 100-yard game for Kai Thomas in his last five. Continues to run through contact. The only thing I'd want to see with Kai is as more and more time kind of passes here is in those short yardage situations, he's got to keep his eyes up. I know that he probably just doesn't want to screw up the assignment, and he is a freshman, so he gets certainly more of a pass than maybe some more of the older running backs. But that's where in these short yardage situations where Minnesota's trying to run it and on 3rd-and-3 or 4th-and-1, keep your eyes up. Try to see where the hole's going to be, not where it currently is. You know where it's designed to be. But I think that'll just continue to come with experience, Luke.
Again, the Goal Line Club brings you Gopher Gridiron Radio. Ryan, it's going to be cold on Saturday, and I can't think of a better place to be pregame than in Williams Arena entryway, sipping on some cocktails, having some good Tony's Diner, and just hanging out with the Gopher faithful.
And that's where the tailgate's going to open at noon because it is a 3 o'clock kickoff next Saturday on Fox at Huntington Pank Stadium. So that means doors open for the tailgate at noon. As Luke said, forecasted highs in the low to mid 30s. Looks like a little bit of a northwest wind, so you're going to have a wind chill in the 20s. If you don't want to stand out there in the tailgating lots when
it's
cold, Come hang out with us at the Goal Line Club tailgate. We are literally right next to the bar. I can assure you, you won't miss us. It opens at noon, unlimited beverages, adult, non-adult, Tony's Diner, and it's warm, and it's right across the street from the stadium, so you can get the most bang for your buck. Again, you can really drink all the way up until 2:45 before the game starts at 3. So if you want to register for the tailgate, go to goallineclub.org, click on events, sign up for the tailgate. You won't regret that you did.
All right, when the Gophers are on the defensive side of the ball, they had a very successful day in general. They only gave up, what was it? I moved the stats. They only gave up 218 yards of total offense, 77 through the air, and 141 on the ground. 33 rushing attempts by Indiana on the day. The quarterback was really limited for them, and they actually did they make the quarterback change out of necessity, or was it out of actual injury? I didn't catch that during the game line.
It was out of necessity. That, I don't think that Tom Allen trusted Donovan McCulley to throw the football.
Okay, but they forced two turnovers on the day, which are nice. Obviously, the interception by Newbin. Also, former wide receiver Philip Howard makes a nice interception. He basically
Do we not count turnover on downs as turnovers anymore? Are you PJ Fleck and I have to be the Joe Rossi in this scenario?
I this is just the stats I have in front of me, Ryan. Sorry.
It's fine. I'm just trying to make sure we're all kept accountable and kept on. I just want to know what your thoughts and opinions. I don't know. Have we discussed this? Are you, Luke, a turnover on downs is actually a turnover? Because Fleck is adamant that it's not. Rossi is adamant that it is. Where do you stand? And then, Derek, where do you stand?
I'll take the definition of a turnover is when you take the ball from the other team.
So you say no.
I'd say no, yeah.
Even though it literally has the words in the name turnover on downs. Okay. Derek, where are you at?
I'm going to say no. I would also not define that as a turnover.
That's interesting to me, but it's something I don't want to dwell too much on. Derek, I know we were texting in that opening drive for Indiana where too many missed tackles. They just weren't ready for the quarterback run. So there's a lot to get into in the middle to later part of the game, but that first drive of the game for Minnesota, what did you see?
Yeah, well, I think a couple things. I don't think Minnesota was getting into their run fits when the quarterback had the ball. So they were doing a lot of reading and reacting, which allowed the Indiana offensive line to get to the second level, and which made the Gopher defenders out of position. Poor tackling 9 times out of 10 is always the result of somebody being out of position. It's not, well, they were in position, they had them dead to rights, they just didn't wrap up. I mean, that happens, but more often than not, it's because you're out of position. And so early in the game, well, that first drive, I guess, the quarterback had the ball, he's taking the snap, and the Gophers are not coming down into their run fits like it's a running back carrying the ball. So they're late, essentially, particularly at the linebacker position and secondary. They're late into their run fits, which is allowing the quarterback to quickly get to the second and third level. So that's what happened on the first drive. Ultimately, they were able to adjust to that, obviously, and treat that quarterback with the ball as if he's a running back. And then also they got more aggressive with their defensive calls later in the game, which when you're calling things like corner crash and blitz and things, you're taking away more of that read and react and giving the defenders just a downhill approach, which really served them well. So, yeah, early in the drive, I think probably maybe did see a couple tackles that should have been made and weren't made. But really, the poor tackling was a symptom of guys being out of position. And Indiana, to their credit, they scripted plays. They knew how they wanted to attack Minnesota. And they were able to put one up early, early on in the game and jump out to a lead.
Okay, so looking at Indiana on the day between the two quarterbacks, they're 8 of 19 for 77 yards, not impressive. And then in general, just running the ball, 33 attempts for 141 yards, 4.3 yard average. And like Ryan, like you said, they really kind of put the stops on after the first drive. a good adjustment by Joe Rossi again after giving up an early touchdown, but really impressive what the defense was able to do on the day. This wasn't a great Indiana offense, but they were able to stay consistent and found a way to obviously only give up 14 points on the day, Ryan.
I mean, in the second quarter, that Minnesota's defense allowed a total of 4 yards on 4 drives, including that Tyler Newbin interception. In the third quarter, they allowed a total of 14 total yards on 3 drives, including the Philip Howard interception. And that's what Fleck talked about after the game, because I think Andy Greeter of the Pioneer Press asked, you know, what changed? And that's what Fleck talked about. They didn't know if it was going to be Michael Penix, who had been practicing. Jack Tuttle had came into the game last week. But Donovan McCulley, they had the other quarterback, what was his name, Grant Gremmel.
Yep, Gremmel.
Whatever Grant Gremmel is. And so once they adjusted the quarterback run, it was just game over. And that's where I think Justice Harris might have played his best game as a Golden Gopher. He was fantastic. I mean, he was, you know, I got a lot of tweets during the game about, you know, why isn't Minnesota, you know, got Braylon Oliver on the field. They got Justice Harris out there. What are they doing? It's like, well, Indiana's in like 11 personnel with 3 or 4 wide receivers the whole game. So, yeah, Minnesota's going to combat that with nickel, if not, you know, 6 DBs out there. And that's where Justice Harris was tremendous in setting the edge and making tackles. And on some of these key plays where, again, why does Minnesota be able to get off the field so frequently after that first drive? Well, they were very, very good in their run fits afterwards. Guys were shedding blocks, guys were setting an edge, and it was a group effort. I mean, there was a third down play, I think, in the second quarter that'll stand out to me, where it's Justice Harris who sets the edge and ends up getting a hand on the quarterback on a third down, but there's like 7 Gophers around him as he's going down to the ground to force the punt. And that's where it was just a complete team effort, but the secondary tackled well. And that's where Jordan Howden continues to do it. Justice Harris had himself a day. Tyler Newbin as well. Philip Howard had a nice hit on the quarterback along with that interception as well. So it's something to where, Derek, I think that's what changed. I mean, you talked about it, but just the run fits. Minnesota also got pressure on a quarterback who didn't really feel comfortable throwing the ball. But being able to stop the run, which has kind of been Minnesota's MO all year after that opening drive, that was the big story.
Yeah, I think Justice Harris, we probably haven't talked enough about him. I would agree with you. Really good game for him, being able to come up and run support. Early on in the game, like we just got done talking about, guys might have been a little shaky with their reads, not confident. He wasn't. He was crisp with his reads. He was fast. He had his run fits, but he had them quick. You know, he was right there. And the faster you can get into your run fit, you're going to funnel things back to your pursuit, as he mentioned. And he was kind of a key cog on anything on the perimeter, you know, really limiting Indiana in the run game. And, you know, to be honest, I don't want to take too much away from the defense, but, you know, we have to admit that Indiana really, really couldn't throw the ball. Now, when you get upside down in the game script and Minnesota jumps out to a big lead, that's where Minnesota's zone defense in the passing game has continued to serve them well. And I think part of it is the fact that the Big Ten, particularly the Big Ten West, but in this case of an East team, just does not have that many dynamic pocket passers. When you drop a lot of guys back into zone, you're vulnerable to a really accurate pocket passer. And outside of Purdue and maybe Ohio State, and you guys can help me if there's a couple more, that's just not the strength of the Big Ten. So Joe Rossi's done a good job, I think, scheming for the type of teams that they're going to see, being able to, as we have just covered here, read and react and make adjustments quickly to shut down. Yes, Indiana was pretty deficient on the offensive side of the ball, but again, quick adjustments early on really shut down, made them one-dimensional, and they just couldn't pass the ball.
There's just not a ton of else defensively that's you know, else there to say. Then on the next 9 drives after that touchdown, Minnesota's defense held Indiana to 52 total yards. And then Minnesota puts in the 2s at the end of the game, and Indiana gets a garbage time touchdown. So that's even where the stats are a little bit inflated for Indiana, where 218 total yards in the day for them. Take out that garbage time drive, and you're somewhere around 130, 140-ish. Yes, Indiana's offense is completely inept. They're on their third-string quarterback, walk-ons at running back. but that's what you're supposed to do to a bad offense. And if you're a good defense, like I think Minnesota has played for a large majority of the season, that's where they're at. And that's where it's weird, Luke, because again, your guy, Joe Rossi, nominated for the Broyles Award, top assistant coach in college football. Mm-hmm. Minnesota is now sitting fourth in the country nationally in total defense. Fourth in the damn country after the abomination that we watched last year.
Yes.
I mean, it's been a hell of a turnaround. And again, it's not just one guy. Does Minnesota have some NFL guys like Boye Mafe out there? Yes, but largely you have just a collective group that is, I mean, it's not just a couple of studs out there carrying. It's each level of the defense is doing well and getting to their assignment. I mean, if I'm going to nitpick anything, the linebacker's got to do a much better job getting off blocks. I mean, that's what stands out, you know, that opening drive for me. Sorry, Marin and Jack Gibbons weren't getting off blocks. They were getting moved out of their run fits, and that's where Braylon Allen and that Wisconsin offensive line are going to want to do one thing, and that's going to get vertical onto the linebackers and then run through tackles. So it's got to be much better and more consistent than I thought it was as the game went on yesterday. But the linebackers are going to have to up their play even another level if Minnesota's going to walk away with the axe.
I thought, Ryan, just a couple more things before we wrap up defense. I thought Asezio Tamiwu, really good game for him both against the
football against his number one graded gopher on defense. You're right.
Okay. Well, I think against run and pass, you know, again, with a team like Indiana who likes to attack the perimeter, particularly when they're running with their quarterback, that requires a mentally strong game from your defensive ends and your outside linebackers. You can't get out of position. You can't bite on a fake. You have to stay home on things like screens. Boye Mafe did a great job reacting to a screen. So I thought a really good game out of the defensive ends, but in particular, Asezio Tamiwu. And then, you know, having to check all those things at the defensive end, you know, you're checking screen, you're checking option, you're checking QB run. To be able to get pressure on the quarterback after running through all your checks can be a challenge. And again, thought that they rose to the challenge. And, you know, the secondary playing good, that good zone pass coverage gave the rush a little bit more time to get pressure. So those two things obviously worked in tandem. But I thought really good game. Just wanted to make sure we highlighted Asezi had a really good game in addition to Justice Harris.
All right, so that'll probably wrap things up on defense again. The defense, as Ryan, as you noted, has drastically improved. Kudos to them. And it'll be interesting to see how they do in this final test against Wisconsin. I'm sure we'll talk about that more in general. But, you know, against an inferior opponent, they really gave up only 14 points. You could argue one of those is a garbage touchdown. So really a good showing from the defense. A great day for them against Indiana. It's once again time for Gopher Math, and this is just a reminder that you're going to have to pay taxes at the end of this year, and they're going to be due sometime probably in April. So make sure you have a plan before that and give a call to Ayers Rock Planning. Make sure you go to their website, ayersrockplanning.com. They'll hook you up with a personalized tax plan just for you, for your family, for your business. Make sure that you have that personalized plan, not for just now, but for the long term, because it is important that you can save money. Because you never know what might come up in your life, like, you know, college for kids, maybe you're going to sell a business, etc. Make sure that you have a plan to handle your tax situation. Ryan knows this all too well as an I-9er. So make sure you call Ayers Rock Planning today or just slide into their DMs, Ayers Rock Planning, right after you win Gopher Math.
And that's where, once again, on the line, 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated, which, again, gets you all the way to late January at this point. And as we'll talk about a little bit later, there's going to be a Black Friday sale for GI and a Cyber Monday. I'll get into that a little bit later. But here is your Gopher Math question for the week. Here we go. Sum of Tanner Morgan's passing yards against Indiana, Bucky Irving's rushing yards against Indiana, and Minnesota's second quarter points. You add those three numbers together, divided by the total number of Gopher touchdowns against Indiana minus total Gopher interception return yards against Indiana. I know it's a lot. Go back and listen if you have to. It is a whole number. First one to tweet it to at Ayers Rock Plans, at Ryan Burns MN, at Gopher Radio with the hashtag Gopher Math gets 2 free months of Gopher Illustrated.
Okay, let's talk a little bit of special teams here. I know, Ryan, you are eager to talk about punt return, punting in general, etc., but we have to probably highlight the play of the game. The punt by Mark Crawford directly to Philip Howard and caught down on the 1 or 2 yard line. That was very, very impressive.
For Fleck talked about it, they just try to play a game of pitch and catch. And when it works like that, when you punt from opponent territory, and that's what it's supposed to look like. 4 punts on the day for Mark Crawford, 36 average with 3 inside the 20. You know, that's the way it's supposed to go. And that's where, if you are going to a punt from near midfield or in opponent territory, heaven forbid, you better be able to pin them inside the 5. And on that instance, they absolutely were. And I mean, Philip Howard and Mark Crawford have been doing that all year.
And then again, on the day, you know, good showing. They didn't have to kick any field goals, but 5 for 5 extra points for Matthew Trickett. Pretty good there. Brock Anikstead, 8.5 yard average, Ryan, on punt returns. I know he did wave one off, which drives you completely nuts. And, you know, he had a long of 12. But generally speaking, I thought he did all right there on punt returns this week.
I have really no thoughts. he does the wave off thing, which I still don't understand. And then the ball just bounces 15 yards. So it's like he got 17 yards of field position, but it's like how many did he lose by just not running up to fair catch? So, yes, I mean, I'm just being bitter at this point because I'm an old man yelling at the clouds. But I'm just no kick returns because Minnesota refuses to kick return. Minnesota doesn't really punt return. They just go punt safe. But good for you, Brock Anikstead, getting 17 yards of field position for your offense.
Generally, how do you guys sit, Derek, maybe starting with you, on not returning the kicks? I really don't hate it that much.
You have to you have to scout the kick coverage of the team you're playing. You know, we talked about they didn't return any kicks versus Ohio State in the first game. Well, if you've had a chance to watch an Ohio State game versus anybody who tries to return a kick against them, that's a good idea to not return the kick because you're going to be tackled inside the 20 more often than not. I know people, it's not exciting. I get it. And you sure would like a chance, that 1% chance you're going to return one for a touchdown. But in a game where you're fighting for yardage and trying to put yourself ahead, it's often not worth it to start on the 14, 15 yard line when you could be on the 25. And so I guess what I'm saying, Luke, is I don't hate it, but you have to, I just think you have to scout the team you're playing. Now, if you have a team that hasn't had good kick coverage, go ahead and return it and see what you get. Maybe instead of a 1% chance at a touchdown or an explosive return, you're up at 10, 15%, then it's probably worth it.
All right. I don't know that I have much more on the special teams front. We know that for the Gophers to beat Wisconsin, though, they're going to have a good showing from special teams, which they did the last time they took the axe back in, what was that, 2018 now. So, but generally speaking, a good day from the special teams unit. Kudos to them, and let's see how they finish the season out. Again, Ryan, when life comes at you fast and you're going to need some insurance, the Burns Insurance Agency out of Oakdale, Minnesota is there to support you. And if you're just looking maybe to change insurance, now's a good time to do it. The year is coming to an end very soon here. Might be a good time to reach out to Bill at Insurance by Burns.
Absolutely, because if there's one thing my father believes in, that's service, service, service. Now, the Burns Insurance Agency, oh my father and gigantic Gopher football fan, Bill Burns. His goal is not to be the biggest insurance agency in the world. It's really not, but it's to be the best possible agency putting your needs first and providing you with the service you deserve. Many Gopher fans have contacted him and experienced that service. I can't tell you how many times I've either been out with my dad on a boat, out in a duck blind, or I've even heard him take calls from the tree stand from his loyal people that get insurance from him. He's making sure that they are covered if something happens. And I'm talking about there's an auto accident, something happens in the home, your commercial business, your UTV, your boat, whatever it may be. Now, like I said, he's a local independent insurance agent in the East Metro there, downtown Oakdale. So if you think you're paying too much money for your insurance or you're just not happy with the service that you get, it's not personalized for you, contact him at bill@insurancebyburns.com via the email or check them out online at insurancebyburns.com.
Okay, let's take a look around the Big Ten. We'll work through all the games as we can. I think we have to start with Michigan State, Ohio State. This was College Game Day's location, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right? Do you guys know? Did you watch? I didn't watch.
Yep.
Okay. So on the day, what a showing from Ohio State. Again, I have often referred to them as basically being an avalanche, in which they were. In the first half, they scored 49 unanswered points. 49 on the day, tallied 56. CJ Stroud, ridiculous. 32 of 35 for 432 yards and six touchdown passes all in the first half. What a day for that offense. They are just gearing up and obviously ready to make a push for the playoff. I just don't see anybody probably beating them. And man, what a showing from that offense. And again, it's got to be fun to be Ryan Day, huh, Ryan?
I would say so. When you are now, Michigan State's pass defense was horrible, and Ohio State exploited that. But that game could have been 85-0 if Ryan Day wanted it to be. And they called off the dogs after C.J. Stroud goes nuclear. And as a Heisman Trophy voter, I am well aware of what C.J. Stroud did in this game against a top 10 team. Now, C.J. Stroud's got another top 10 team this upcoming weekend. And then we'll obviously have likely a ranked opponent once again in the Big Ten championship game. But what C.J. Stroud in that entire passing game is doing right now, it just looks effortless. And whether it's Garrett Wilson or Chris Olave or Jackson Smith and Jigba, I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, especially when you can just hand it to Travion Henderson and he gets 7 yards a clip. I mean, that offense is just incredible. Now, give some credit to the defense for letting the offense just continually getting possession after possession after possession. But Ohio State is an absolute juggernaut, and I don't see Khaki Pants being able to get his first victory against them this upcoming weekend.
I don't know, Derek, if you had a chance to watch that game. What I learned after the game was on the season, Michigan State had the worst pass defense in the Big Ten, and they definitely ended the game with the worst pass defense.
Yeah, it looked to me, I did get a chance to watch the first half, and it looked to me like Ohio State coaches took a hard look at the Michigan State tape. If you remember, Michigan, who hasn't thrown the ball particularly well, threw it all over the field on Michigan State. So that was something that the coaching staff had identified. And obviously with the talent that Ryan alluded to that Ohio State has in the passing game, it didn't take a math genius to put two and two together and know that that's what they were going to do from the start of the game. And so, you know, I always go back to, probably to a fault, I go back to matchups, and this was a bad matchup for Michigan State. You know, Michigan State was a top 10 team and could play, you know, to the wire or beat a lot of good teams, but it was not a good matchup with Ohio State. Ohio State's prolific passing attack and being on and against what you just talked about, Luke, which is a pass defense that has been maybe not been exposed to the degree that we saw in the Ohio State game prior to, but it certainly was on Saturday. And, you know, last thing is, Ohio State, with the talent that they have, you know, they're loaded with your four-star, multiple five-star guys. It's not always, I don't want to say easy, but those guys don't always get up for every game. Coaches have to motivate those guys. But when they want to play and they have a top 10 matchup and it's at home and it's the game of the week, watch out, because they brought everything and it was over quickly.
All right, so moving on to the next game, Michigan 59, Maryland 18. My takeaway from this game was, thankfully, Maryland lost, so we get Maryland and Rutgers, both 5-6 teams next week, battling it out for a right to go to a bowl game, so that made it interesting. But yeah, Maryland's offense not able to really get going. You know, Michigan just too much. 28 points in the third quarter for them. They were pretty balanced as well. Just overwhelmed that Maryland defense. And, you know, it sets up two pretty good matchups next week between Michigan, Ohio State, and then Maryland and Rutgers. So I don't know if you guys have any comments on this. I didn't get to watch much of this one. Just saw it in passing mostly. But yeah, wow.
Mike Locksley's defense blows. They have given up 30-plus points to every team not named Illinois. Well, that and Howard and Michigan. Well, here's what I'll say. I'm going to get that entire thing wrong and tell you that in their last 8 games, they've given up 30 straight points. And it's just, it's insane that that defense is just, it starts well. And as the season goes on, it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And again, here we are, get another Mike Locksley season where they're going to be trying to get from a bowl game. So we'll see what happens.
All right, let's move on to Nebraska, Wisconsin. I did get to watch a good portion of this one. I think there's a lot to kind of touch on here, but Wisconsin wins 35-28. And frankly speaking, Nebraska's offense really found a way to move the ball. They didn't always convert it into points, but they consistently were able to score, scoring a touchdown in every single quarter, which is arguably probably the best any offense has done this year against Wisconsin. But generally speaking, they were getting most of it through the air, Derek. So what did you observe from this specific game?
Well, as you alluded to, Nebraska seemingly cracked the code a bit on that Wisconsin defense that not only has not given up a lot of points, they haven't given up anything, you know, in the last several weeks. They've been on this incredible streak the last 4 or 5 weeks of just giving up absolutely nothing to opposing offenses. And I think what Nebraska did, and unfortunately for Gopher fans, I don't know that there's a lot of carryover, only because Nebraska's offense from a philosophical and approach standpoint is just completely different than Minnesota. But you can bet that the Minnesota coaches will be watching this tape and see if there's some things that they can replicate with their approach. But most of it was through the air. You know, Nebraska used that option game. They were able to get a few explosive gains in the running just through straight option when they had them outnumbered on one side of the field. But really, it was relying on that pass offense and forcing Nebraska to defend every inch of the field. You know, getting guys running around in the secondary, spreading out the defense. I think we talked about this with the Iowa defense before the Gophers played Iowa, but I think the same thing applies to Wisconsin. They're at their best when they're able to just play in a phone booth downhill against a predictable offense. They can jump routes. They can jump runs. As soon as they read run, they can come downhill. They can stuff things. You know, they can just be all over the place, look like they have 12 defenders on the field. But what Nebraska did is they just disarmed them by running multiple receivers in the backfield and all different kinds of route combinations. And, you know, Adrian Martinez gets enough time with his legs to let those long routes develop and let guys leak open in the secondary somewhere, and he was able to find him several times. And so that was the big shocker of this game, is just seeing Nebraska able to, it wasn't fluke plays. I mean, they marched up and down the field several times.
So we probably have to at least touch on the fact that there was a very, very obvious missed pass interference towards the end of the game there. You know, that needs to be called. But again,
it was egregious. He got there way early.
Yeah, like, it was bad.
I think the whole thing with like refs in those final moments, just trying to be like, well, we're just going to let it play. It's like, no, if it's a foul in the final 15 seconds of the game, why wouldn't it be a foul 40 minutes into the game? I just have never understood that.
But yeah, generally speaking, that call, you know, cost Nebraska, not saying they're going to win the game because they still have to convert the touchdown. They still have to, you know, get the extra point. They still have to win in overtime. But, you know, that obviously put them behind the eight ball. But again, it's just another one score loss for them to a top 25 team. And I don't know how many this is now, but it's just getting to be absurd. And frankly speaking, I know, Derek, you and I have texted back and forth about this. This has to somewhat be on the coaches because they're about the most consistent thing here outside of Adrian Martinez.
Yeah, it's, you know, I know this has been talked about a lot just by the national media, but Nebraska and their untimely mistakes, whether it's in the special teams game or, you know, you look at this game and if someone were to tell you what the yardage numbers and point totals would be for Nebraska's offense, you would think they have a very good chance that they would have won the game. And if they limit mistakes, even to a small degree, they probably do win the game. But, you know, their defense, Nebraska's defense, which had been pretty good, a lot better than they had been in previous years. Again, they weren't a pushover in this game, but just some key breakdowns. And then again, a couple of turnovers, again, untimely by Nebraska, special teams errors, and it's just enough to lose the game for them by, yet again, one score. So I do believe it comes down to coaching because there can't be, in which I think, to be fair, in some areas, I think is better for Nebraska than the coaching than it had been in previous, but it's still that many one score losses. And looking at, you know, you can't live on the stat sheet, but you also can't ignore the number of games where Nebraska seemingly wins in many different phases and comes up short on the scoreboard.
All right, probably the last thing here, Ryan. Braylon Allen, 228 yards on 22 attempts, 3 touchdowns on the day, 10.4-yard average. He eclipses the 1,000-yard mark in this game. Boy can play.
I'm already sick and tired of hearing that Braylon Allen's 17 years old. It's like the big running joke that's not a joke on Twitter anymore. It's like anytime Braylon Allen does anything, people just go, he's 17 years old. And I'm just like, yes, but like, what's Bucky Irving? Like Braylon Allen is really good. And Braylon Allen is incredibly talented. And Braylon Allen has 7 straight 100-yard games for the Wisconsin Badgers. And in turn, probably correlated, the Wisconsin Badgers have won 7 straight games. Dude's a monster. He's not only big, he's really fast. So is that going to be the number one priority if Minnesota's going to win the game on Saturday, is to try and limit Braylon Allen as best they can? Yes. But every time he does something good, I'm just tired of the whole 17-year-old thing. But he is really good, man.
He's really
seems
good.
Like they found their next good one.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so maybe jump down to Penn State and Rutgers. Penn State 28, Rutgers 0, which sets up a really good matchup again, as I alluded to, between Rutgers and Maryland, because Rutgers got no offense. Maryland got no defense. Rutgers got a defense. Maryland's got an offense. So let's see how this thing plays out next week for the right to go to a bowl game. But in that game, 28-0, not really close. Clifford didn't play. Clifford got injured. Okay.
Clifford got injured. He was banged up coming in, and they ended up just benching him because they didn't need him, because Rutgers' offense is bad. Penn State's defense is good.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the backup quarterback show. So it's going to be interesting because, like I said, Maryland has allowed 30 straight points in like 7 or 8 straight games where Rutgers' offense is really bad. So a movable force meets a very movable object. So
all right,
we're going to see what comes to play next week.
All right, so then Purdue 32, Northwestern 14. I don't get the being enamored with playing football games in Wrigley Field, but apparently they did that again. But on the day, Aiden O'Connell, 29-39, 423 yards, 3 touchdowns. Pretty good day for him. I don't think anybody is surprised by the result. The fact that Purdue wins, and it just sets up a huge mess in the Big Ten West, guys.
Well, the one notable thing, maybe a little bit comedic, was this is a one-score game at halftime. First of all, the field conditions were terrible, so that the players were slipping all over the field. I don't know if they brought in turf specifically for the game, but that didn't work out well. But it's a one-score game at halftime. Purdue is kicking to Northwestern to open the second half, and the kicker falls down on the kick. And Purdue ends up recovering the kick because it bounced off a Northwestern returner. So in effect, it was an accidental onside kick, and Purdue scores on that drive and ends up never looking back.
Right.
So it's a one score game. The field conditions ended up being a huge factor inadvertently.
Yeah. I don't get this thing about playing games in other venues that aren't made to watch football, but I guess they do it with ice hockey, and occasionally they play basketball on aircraft carriers, but it's something that the marketing people seem to love. So I don't get it at all. But again, Purdue wins, which sets up obviously a very interesting last week in the Big Ten, because if they win against Indiana, which they likely should, they should have a share of the Big Ten West title. So let's get to Illinois and Iowa. I watched a good portion of this game, and I texted you guys after Illinois went up 10-0. I said, well, let's see what Alex Padilla and the Iowa offense can do, down 10 points. And next thing you know, you have a touchdown return on special teams, and it's 10-7. And my point was completely lost within a matter of one 100-yard sprint. And frankly speaking, guys, this, this Iowa offense is still, even with Padilla, you know, he gives them a little bit more, but they're just not good. They're just not very good at offense, period.
Eric, you want to take this one?
Well, I guess I'll start, Ryan. I'm trying to find words. You have to give credit to Iowa. PJ Fleck talks about cultural sustainability, and I know some people think that's mumbo jumbo, and sometimes it is. In a game like this, I think there's something to it. And the reason I say that is somehow, some way, Iowa figures out a way to, as they often do, to get a game script going against Illinois in the site once they're able to take the lead, or and once Illinois gave up the lead, as Luke talked about, and they just keep the ball, try and keep it away. I mean, I'll say this: late in the game, Iowa's really not even trying to score. They're trying to play keep away from Illinois, and I couldn't believe the number of times, the number of opportunities that Illinois had late in the game to tie or take the lead. I would say, I mean, if I had to go break the game down, I'll bet you it's 6, 7, 8 different times, and Illinois got nothing. They just got nothing out of their offense. Not only were they not close, they couldn't even move the ball. So, yes, that's partly a credit to Iowa's defense. It's a great credit to them. Probably some after Illinois showed some life in the first half on offense, they just ran out of the bag of tricks, I guess. But as you're talking about, and I guess what I'm trying to articulate here is, Iowa just finds a way to game script a team that came out looking good, and it looked like they were going to have a chance, and Iowa's offense did not look good at all. But yet, with multiple opportunities, Illinois can't find a way. Iowa gets out again with a win.
All right, Ryan.
You know what Iowa's longest scoring drive of the day was?
No.
It scored 33 points and had...
Their offense only scored 19.
Yes. Their longest scoring drive of the day was 58 yards.
All right, here you go, Ryan. Here's my take. I told this to Derek already. The 2021 Iowa team is basically the equivalent of every upper echelon or contending Northwestern teams. Their defense is really good. Their special teams make some plays, but offensively they just don't have it, or they just have enough just to make it work.
I don't disagree, but now Iowa's 9-2. They're 6-2. And Minnesota's going to need some help if they're going to get to Indianapolis next week.
All right, so that'll wrap up the Big Ten stuff. Let's talk a little bit about the Wisconsin game. I know Ryan, you and I will preview it in more depth, but Derek, it'd be interesting to get some of your thoughts going into this Axe Week game.
Yeah, again, having a chance to look at a lot of the Nebraska game and see some of the things that were done, it's interesting to look forward and try and, you know, handicap this thing and look at what Minnesota is going to do. So a couple things that I think maybe just to look for in the game, what approach is Minnesota going to take on defense? Ryan talked about it. Braylon Allen's running all over the place. So the conventional wisdom and conventional approach, which is, this is what Minnesota's done going back prior to the PJ Fleck era. So I would say the last 10, 12 times, what they do is they load the box. They try and take away the run and force Wisconsin to pass. Now, the interesting thing that gives me pause on this, I'm not saying that's the wrong thing to do, but what Wisconsin, a couple things that make me nervous there. One is, and I won't spend long on this because I've spent long enough in the past, that always lends itself to the Wisconsin quarterback having, if not the game of the year, a very good game. Because loading up the box, you're going to leave a lot of receivers in man coverage. Wisconsin loves to throw the ball to the tight end. So if Minnesota chooses that approach, look for Wisconsin. If they don't find success early in the run game, I would expect them to drop that and just go right into the passing game. Now, some people are maybe licking their chops and saying, great, well, let's hope that Graham Mertz throws interceptions. I hope that too, but that's other than the 2018 game, we generally haven't seen that. The other thing I would say with loading the box, particularly against Braylon Allen, is the Wisconsin offense this year running the ball is a little bit different. Braylon Allen doesn't hit the hole quickly, so he's not your Melvin Gordon type running back where he gets the ball and he's to the second level in a flash. He's a very patient runner, and Wisconsin's front offensive line hasn't been very clean this year. But what he does is he holds the ball. He's patient. He waits for a breakdown. And maybe 4 out of 5 running plays, you're able to get him. You know, he gets either a tackle for a loss or he gets 2 or 3 yards and it's a nondescript play. But when you load the box, you only leave one safety deep. And he, what he's been able to do is be patient enough. And then 1 out of every 10 or 15 runs, he's able to break free and he has enough speed to outrun the safety. So it'll be interesting to see what Minnesota's approach. Again, conventionally, you would expect him to load the box, but that's backfired in a couple different ways. Flipping over on offense, same thing applies. If Minnesota takes the conventional approach, which is what they've done every single time they've played Iowa or Wisconsin in the PJ Fleck era, I think that the defense then has to hold Wisconsin to less than 20 points. I don't think that if you're not dynamic enough and you don't take enough chances on offense, which we've, you know, I hear what you're saying, but want to see what you're doing. And that's not what they've done. If they're going to play it close to the vest, then I think you have to play lights out on defense and win it 17-14, something like that.
And so here are the scenarios, because I've gotten a ton of tweets, a ton of people in Gopher Illustrated asking about it, is how does Minnesota actually legitimately win the West? So here's what has to happen. On Friday, Nebraska, which by the way, opened as a favorite, a 3-8 Nebraska team is opened as a Vegas favorite over the 9-2 Iowa Hawkeyes in Lincoln. Minnesota fans need to be Nebraska fans. They need Nebraska to win the football game. And then they need Purdue to beat Indiana. And then if you can get the axe back, that's how it all happens. Because you would have, in that scenario, 4 teams tied in the West with 6 wins, Wisconsin, Minnesota, Purdue, and Iowa. Then it comes down to tiebreakers, where Minnesota would be 2-1 against those 3 other teams. Wisconsin would be 2-1 against those 3 other teams. Purdue 1-2, Iowa 1-2. And with Minnesota and Wisconsin being 2-1, Minnesota wins the tiebreaker because they would have the head-to-head win. So that's how it happens, is Minnesota needs to win. Nebraska needs to actually legitimately beat a ranked team. And then Purdue needs to beat Indiana. It's not the craziest thing you've ever heard of. There are scenarios that, well, I tell you right now, if Iowa wins, the game for Minnesota in the Big Ten West race is just dead. But then it just comes down to you got to get the axe. So if Nebraska wins on Friday, hold on to your butts.
This is the chaos. Just embrace the chaos. Man, Friday night, I'm going to be obviously tuning in to watch that Nebraska and Iowa game.
Black Friday, baby.
Yeah, it'll be a fun game.
The other question I continue to get is, why does the Purdue game matter? Because in that scenario, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa would then be, so say Indiana pulls the upset and beats Purdue, but Minnesota wins and so does Nebraska. And everybody's why does the Purdue one win?
Yeah.
Well, it's because then Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Iowa would be 1-1 against each other. And then it comes down to the second tiebreaker, which is your division against the Big Ten West overall. And that's where, even with a Minnesota win in that instance, Wisconsin would be 5-1 against the West, where Minnesota would be 4-2. And that's where that Illinois loss could come back to hurt them. But
wouldn't that be the worst?
Can you imagine? Wouldn't that be like the most Minnesota sports thing of all time? Is Minnesota gets the axe, Nebraska does what they need to do, and then because Purdue doesn't get it done, as Purdue is a 15-point home favorite over Indiana, and Minnesota doesn't get to go to Indianapolis. So there's trust me, it's convoluted. I've tweeted out a graphic. You can check it on the Twitter machine. But to Derek's point, I mean, if there's anything left in the playbook for Mike Sanford at this point, just air it out. Yeah. You literally have nothing left to lose. You have no pressure on you, in my mind, in terms of Minnesota in this game. I mean, Wisconsin's the favorite. Wisconsin has won this so many times. Minnesota hasn't even won at home against Wisconsin since 2003. And if you can stop Braylon Allen and make Graham Mertz beat you, all I can hear in the back of my head is, but Ryan, and again, in my best Derek Burns voice, don't you remember that Wisconsin and Iowa quarterbacks against Minnesota are the next coming of Patrick Mahomes? And I'm like, well, Derek, I do remember that. But if they don't stop Derrick Henry Light, none of it's going to matter. So we will get into it a lot more once I continue to do more research and talk to the different coaches this week. But there are still plausible ways, because as I said, let's see, what was it? Nebraska. Oh my God. So this game opened actually as a pick 'em, and it's been bet up to Nebraska -3.5. So Nebraska is a three. If the favorites win in terms of Nebraska and Indiana, and you take care of business at home, there is still a chance in Indianapolis.
So interestingly, Ryan, I can somewhat see how Nebraska has been bet up to be a favorite. I think from a matchup standpoint, Nebraska isn't a good matchup for Iowa. I think that creates problems. But here's the thing. Where Nebraska's struggled is untimely turnovers on offense and special teams breakdowns. Where has Iowa made their pay? Turnovers on defense and special teams.
I feel like this game is going to be a double-digit point victory for either team. There will be no one-score game in this. It's either going to be Iowa runs away with it because Adrian Martinez is a turnover machine, or Nebraska runs away with it because Adrian Martinez doesn't turn over the ball. I just feel like there will be really no in-between because it's just the way it goes with Nebraska. So we'll have to see how it plays out. But for all you Gopher fans, you want to be Scott Frost fans on Friday.
All right, so we want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to the Burns Insurance Agency, the Goal Line Club, and Ayers Rock Planning. Thank you for listening, and go Gophers.